The title of the message is, Who is the Greatest? I'm going to read from Mark 9, 30-37. They left that place and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know where they were, because he was teaching his disciples. And he said to them, The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after 3 days he will rise. But they did not understand what he meant, and were afraid to ask him about it. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, What were you arguing about on the road? But they kept quiet, because on the way they were arguing about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, Anyone who wants to be first must be very last and be a servant of all. He took a little child, in whom he placed among them, and taking the child in his arms, he said to them, Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Three guys were fishing on the lake when an angel appeared in the boat with them. The first guy gets over his shock and humbly asks the angel, I have suffered from back pain for many years. Is it too much to ask that you help me? The angel touched the man's back, and he feels instant relief. The second guy points to his Coke bottle glasses and asks if the angel could cure his poor eyesight. The angel touches the man's eyes and throws his glasses into the lake. When they hit the water, the man's vision became clear and he could see everything distinctly. The angel now turns to the third guy, who throws up his hands in fear. Don't touch me, he cries. I'm on disability. I was a little reluctant at first to use that story, but because it implies some things that you could see negatively. But I think sometimes our disabilities is in our hearts and our minds. I think sometimes we're a little closed-minded, and sometimes we don't want to be changed, and we don't want nobody to touch us or change what we think. And so I said, okay, I'll probably use that one. That'll be fine. he won't get his disability check. Who is the greatest? Well, I don't know how many of you watch the Super Bowl, but I guess we know who the greatest is when it comes to football, right?
They won.
They won, that's all, right?
No.
No.
Not really. I don't really even know who won or care.
They cheat. What, because of a play, a game, a bad call that wouldn't have put the LA Rams in there? So they're not the greatest, are they? Is it a matter of opinion? I thought maybe I would stir up a few minds and hearts here over that one. But what is the greatest? What does it mean to be the greatest? We have already had a disagreement on who won the New England Patriots. So how do we define what greatness is? The dictionary defines greatness as much more than the ordinary, or much higher in some quality or degree. Well, I guess Brady can throw the football the best, right? Or in your case, you say he can cheat the best. So either way, he's the greatest, right? How do we measure greatness? Well, I just gave an example or two. Greatness is said to be measured by others. We look at, in this case, we're talking about the Super Bowl, and we can sit back and say and have an opinion of who is the greatest. It's measured by others. History has a way of measuring greatness. We look back through history and we say, after people have passed, and we say that was a great person. Self-acclaimed greatness is not greatness at all. One can claim themselves to be great, which we see a lot in politics today, and I guess in football. Self-acclaimed greatness, self-esteem, that is not greatness at all. That I don't think is, that comes with a whole lot of problems. I hear the word great and greatness in this political realm so many times that I get sick and tired of hearing it. There are many people along the way who have had many failures along the way, who greatness wasn't achieved until later in life. Ulysses S. Grant, who I've learned was a failed officer in the Army. He had a drinking problem. He failed in many attempts in business. But in 5 years, he rose to be one of the most important men in history and in the Civil War. General Patton, whose entire reputation came only in a few months in World War II. So basically his whole life was, no one really knew him and probably wouldn't have known him except for a few weeks in World War II. Albert Einstein is really only great for two theories, special theory of relativity and the general theory of relativity. I used to know what the difference was, but I can't remember it. But he spent his whole life just on a few theories. Yes, they have helped us along the way. Greatness is kind of measured on a human scale. It is many times seen as people who rise above others, which we're going to see in here in a few minutes that is not really necessarily the biblical idea of greatness. Lincoln, some people in here are very knowledgeable about Lincoln in the Civil War. And when he was aspiring in his lawyer days, he went to a meeting in which were judges and lawyers, high-priced lawyers, sat on one end of the table and the more common clientele sat on the other. And Lincoln sat with the more common people. And the judge wanted Lincoln to come up, have him come up and sit with him and all the high-priced lawyers and the bigwigs of the day, and he says, "Joe, do you have any better food up there than I have down here? If not, I'm just going to stay here." And the food was the same. So his idea was that, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not that important to him. I had to find a few other people. I found there's many people. There's a lot of African Americans. There's many, many people, Hispanics and white people and women. I mean, you have a list that goes on and on and on of people who rose up and did great things and who had humility in doing it. And Eleanor Roosevelt, who I picked for the women, was more than was an average first lady, or a little bit more than average, because she spoke out for the African American rights and women's rights. So I kind of picked her out of, because we'd be here all day if we were going to list a lot of people. I can remember in high school, one of the people that are African Americans that stuck out for me, it was George Washington Carver. I have that name always stuck in my head ever since I was in grade school. How he did plants, I think, if I remember right, a lot of things in the, he was one person that really stuck out in my head, and still, if I would recall, think his name came up automatically. Eleanor Roosevelt said that, one of the things she said, that, you know, to do what you feel right in your heart, for you'll be criticized anyway, and you'll be damned if you do and damned if you don't. I think that's so much true. If you're gonna stand up for something, or if you don't stand up for anything, you're going to be criticized in some ways. If you're in a public of any sort, even amongst your friends, people will criticize you, or they'll have an opinion different than you, and you might as well stand up and say what you think is in your heart. Not necessarily in your mind, but in your heart. Albert Finney died this week. I don't know, he's an actor. Anybody know him? Yeah, he died this week. And from what I learned about him, he didn't really seek fame. He didn't attend a lot of the big festival, you know, rewards ceremonies, and he just liked to act, and he was kind of wanted to stay off in the sidelines and be more humble about him. himself and his talents. Is greatness an illusion? Should it be sought? Somehow greatness seems to roll over into fame. You roll that over into greatness and fame. That seems to be a lot of emphasis going on today. People want to be famous for it. They go on Facebook and they have a posting and they do this and they want a few minutes of fame. But I think in many ways, most of us are great. Most of us are individuals. We think of everyday acts and actions that we do. Aren't they great? Just to help one-to-one? Isn't there a greatness there that goes on? Can't we see as individuals ourselves as being great? A smile, just being nice, isn't that helping someone else? And no matter what, whatever way you do it, one of the ways I see a lot of is a lot of road rage anymore these days. People get mad and they do dumb things behind the wheel. I think. What?
People who suffer from road rage, and I say suffering because frequently somebody dies. Often the enraged person causes an accident.
You know, I think we could just kind of, anymore, the way I react to a lot of it, I just let the people go ahead and do their dumb things and then I go on down the road because I'm not going to get in the middle of it. I want to stay away from it. I see a lot of it.
And it can cause too much trouble for
I see an awful lot. A lot more than really makes me feel comfortable anymore in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of good drivers, don't get me wrong. A lot of good people. But a lot of people are doing dumb acts anymore driving down the road.
There are a lot of good people, but it's the others that we notice more.
Yes. It only takes a few bad ones to make everybody look, you know, to stand out. And isn't that the case? Again, should we seek greatness? How does Jesus go look at it? In the first reading of the text, Jesus is telling his disciples that he's gonna, the Son of Man is gonna have to die and be delivered into the hands of people of men, and they're gonna kill him, and then he's gonna rise again. So, in our understanding of greatness, how does a leader go through all that, and how did the disciples decipher it? They didn't understand it. It was totally foreign to them, a different idea altogether. How can a leader be a servant and be born again and rise up and be a servant to all? How can this happen? They didn't know. They were even afraid to ask him for fear of, you know, I mean, I've been in situations where I'm afraid to ask dumb questions because I don't want to be look like I'm ignorant. So you don't ask the question. And I kind of get a sense of the disciples saying, well, we don't understand, but I'm afraid to ask for fear that Jesus might think we're dumb.
Unfortunately, if you never ask the questions, you remain dumb.
Pretty much.
You don't learn much if you never ask.
I like people when they start out, this may be a dumb question, but it's not a dumb question if you're asking it.
You're asking. You say right. That to me, I'll say, well, probably the answer will be dumb too.
How else do you learn? How else do you seek? How else do you get knowledge? Jesus' idea of greatness is certainly different than what we would think in the normal world. He's seen himself that servitude, in other words, greatness comes through servitude and lowering yourself down rather than rising yourself up onto the top of the mountain. In the world in which we see around us, most of the time, fame and greatness, you rise above the crowd, above the people. You go up on the mountain, and most people will tell you that's been up on the mountain of fame and greatness, it gets pretty lonely up there. Eventually, you got to come back down and live in the field. A couple messages ago, I talked about how that throughout the Bible, it talks about people going up to the mountain, but Jesus talks about a field and transforming that mountain peak and valleys into a level field. The promised land was not a promised mountain to go to. It was a promised land, which is a fertile area, a flat, well-fertilized soil. So the land becomes us within our hearts and minds. We are living in a place in which servitude is what should be sought after. Greatness is not elevating yourself up into a peak, but yet it is lowering yourself down into the field of humanity and to helping everyone and equality. This is one of the arguments I have for universal salvation, or the possibility of universal salvation, is Jesus transforms a mountain into a field. And so it's a field in which is us as humanity. Yes, we must go up to the mountaintop to be transfigured a couple messages ago, to be changed, but we must climb down from the mountain and live in the land. This is not the country of the mountain of the free, it is the land of the free. You think about that for a minute. We're not supposed to be this peak in the world, we're supposed to be the land of the free. We're struggling an awful lot trying to fulfill this land of the free rather than a mountain peak in which we only freedom is given to a certain amount of people. It says that anyone who wants to be first must be last and be servant of all. Now, doesn't that really fly against what we would normally accept as being true? Absolutely. It's what?
You want to go to the front of the line, you want to be first.
Yeah. That's not what Jesus is saying. It's that you have to go to the end of the line. And be, if you know something, that doesn't elevate you up above everybody else. It only means that you should be reaching out and helping people who don't. It's the servitude in which Jesus is talking about. Somehow we seem to have it backwards. Of course, humanity has a lot of things backwards as far as I'm concerned, upside down. Then he says in closing, he said he took a little child and placed it amongst them. And he takes an example of us as becoming little children spiritually is used throughout Jesus' illustrations. But it's a little more complex than just a story of a little children. He says, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. But he goes on to say something else. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but one who sent me. I found that to be a really interesting statement. I think it points to Jesus as pointing to something beyond himself, in which someone has sent him, and again, it helps to boost my argument of a hierarchy into the heavens. Jesus is moving the idea from children to him up into the heavens. The idea is very easily applied there, in my estimate. Who sent Jesus? Anybody want to comment on that one? We say God sent him, or the Father sent him. That's what a biblical example of it is. But I think it's a little more complicated than that. I think it's the Spirit of God that dwelt in Jesus, which dwells in us. I think there's where it continues. So as the Spirit of God dwells in us, dwells in Jesus, and it goes up the line, up the line, up the line. It's not so much the individual, it's the Spirit of God. It's something we don't really understand all that well. We see it as individuals, I think, sometimes. John relates to the transition between disciple and friendship that Jesus talked about. And in John, he talks about how you are no longer my disciple, but you are my friend. So John relates it as we have a friend-based relationship with Jesus or with God. That's not a teacher-student no more. Now you start becoming a friend. Many of us have friends. We have very close friends. We share many different things back and forth. I was listening to E.T., one of them entertainment things, last night for a little bit. And it was about Oprah, who has a friend. And they tell each other everything. They were commenting on an upcoming show or something that they were doing. And they said about how friends can share and say anything. And they were talking about it, criticizing each other back and forth. And they said, well, friends can say anything. If they're not dressed right and we don't like it, well, we say it. You know, and that level, I think, is what John is talking about. It's not necessarily, if you're in the presence in the Spirit of God, there's a sense of equality. And that's what John is trying to say. He's saying that you're no longer a teacher-student. You now become friends. There's an elevation in the Gospel of John to friendship. And there's teachers in here. At some point in time, you have to let go of that student, and that student becomes more of a friend. He goes out and lives his life or his or her life, and you see that person as it grows, and that you at some point, and maybe at some time, you might develop a friendship. So it changes from a student to a friendship. And that's what Jesus is talking about. You build a relationship of not looking down on that person and being that a student or above that person in greatness, you become that person's friend, and thus servitude is become more alive and well. Friend through friendship. I will close with a quote from Martin Luther King. It means that it's referring to greatness, and it means that everyone can be great. I agree with that. Because everyone can serve. I agree with that. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. I agree with that. You don't have to have all your subjects or your verbs agree to serve. In other words, you don't have to have proper language and, you know, say words elegantly to serve. You can serve in many different ways. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics and physics to serve. You don't have to be well educated and know baffle everything with your knowledge to serve. You only have to have a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love, and you can be a servant of God. Amen.
Courtyard echoes with the A courtyard echoes with the sound of ridicule and scorn. I see a purple robe of shame, a cruel crown of thorns. The angry cries of crucify, now lead me to the street. I bear the insult of the cross for everyone to see. As the hammer starts to fall, the nails begin to sink. I'm firmly held in the embrace and torment of the tree. The father turns his face away, my mother starts to weep. I breathe my last and now the cup holds nothing more to see. I am the Lamb, I am the Lamb. I see the cup before me, I am in the Father's hand. The sacrifice is chosen, and the ransom must be paid.